Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. It's your host, it's your boys, Hanif and Wajid. We're back for another week of sports. Hanif, how you doing, mate?
Not bad. How you doing, kid?
I'm good. How was your week?
Not awesome. A lot of sport. And yeah, just been running, really.
As always, we have a special guest with us. This man is one of the finest rugby players of his generation. He was a professional rugby league star for 14 years, also at the highest level representing his country. He's now trying to conquer Hollywood as he conquered the Super League. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you the one and only Keith Mason. Keith, thank you very much for being with us here tonight.
Thank you very much, guys. That's quite an introduction. I'm very happy to be on Radio Sangam, right?
That's right.
But I'm looking forward to this 90 minutes or whatever.
Well, you're here with us for the hour.
Okay, good hour.
So, generally speaking, it flies by. But I don't want to waste any more time. Let's get into it. Let's talk a bit about your history, your story, where you come from.
Well, I was born in Dewsbury, not far from Huddersfield, where we are right now. I got four brothers and sisters, three sisters, one brother. My mum, she pretty much raised us all on her own, no dads about. I didn't really have a father figure. I didn't really know my dad until I got to around 15, 16 year old. So as a young kid, you know, I was full of energy, full of beans. My mum put me into rugby, and ultimately rugby saved my life, because, you know, from being a young kid where I grew up on Dewsbury Moor, a lot of the guys didn't have father figures. So when you've not got a father figure about, you know, you tend to go on the wayside and get caught up in gangs and get into a lot of trouble. So there were not a lot of discipline there, but I did have a lot of love at home. But when I was a kid, I was in and out of rugby, never really focused and disciplined like I should have been. Not my fault, probably my environment. And yeah, my childhood was pretty wild, you know.
Colourful, shall we say.
Very colourful, yeah. I don't think I was a bad kid. I think, you know, I got into a lot of naughty stuff and got into a lot of trouble. And from the ages of 11 to 14, I look back now and I was never proud of this, but I look back and I think, well, you know, I did well to get out of this situation, but I went to court 45 times from being a young kid, just, you know, doing petty stuff, petty crimes. But I was in a gang of youths who were, you know, in and out of trouble. Some of them was in and out of homes, and ultimately it took my friend to get sent to jail for me to turn my life around. And that was 14 years of age, and I never looked back. I cut everybody off. I was lucky I didn't go to jail. I got a 2-year probation, and I started training every single day, cut everybody off, and my goal was to be a rugby league player, a professional Super League player. And I trained day in, day out. I even trained on Christmas days.
So that's the commitment. That's what you've got to do.
Yeah. I always say, you know, in life, you change by two things. You either change through pain or desperation. And I was desperate not to go down the path that I saw many of my friends go down, and elder people. And, you know, I just wanted to be somebody. For some reason, my friend went to jail and I got off, and I was only 14 years old. And my life changed. I walked out of that court, and I wanted to be a professional rugby league player. I thought, no more messing about now. You know, there's reasons, obviously, for any kid out there. I do believe that young boys need father figures, or they need mentors to look up to, and I never really had that. You know, my mentors were people who got into trouble, people who took drugs, and, you know, it wasn't like they didn't love me, but there wasn't the ideal people to look up to. So, to be honest with you, I did it the hard way. But my drive, which is a big part of what I've got right now, and what's made me successful in everything I do, is you know, the 14-year-old kid and all the knockbacks as well as a kid. You know, it wasn't easy for me, and that's what built resilience. And it's very profound that when I came out of court, that I just switched, and I just thought it was like a spiritual awakening. It was very strange. I never looked back, and then within 4 years of going to jail, I was on a plane to go to Australia to play in the biggest competition in the world, in the NRL. So, you know.
And you kept on touching on it in regards to your friend. Do you mind sharing what it was that your friend went down for?
Well, there were many things there.
Well, that particular one.
It was burglary. And the guy, I was at home, and the guy came down to my house. He was with another friend, and asked me to, if I'd go and help him at his house and get some stuff. And, you know, I was 13 years old. You know, I wasn't thinking straight, and It was always like, you know, let's do something for your older mate, or, you know, a bit of peer pressure. You want to look cool.
Yeah, of course.
But yeah, it was pretty well. Listen, I've seen both sides. You know, I've been on that side, and I can still go back to where I grew up. I grew up on Pilgrim Estate. It's pretty much, it was a mix of Muslim and whites, but it's pretty much majority is Muslims now, the Gudgers, and I love them because every time I go back, I go Gudger gang, and they go yeah, mate, kid, because obviously they realised, you know, they knew I was, they knew what I've been through,
yeah, of course.
And to see somebody come out of that situation and go on and do what I've done in my career, and then, you know, post career as well, it just goes to show that, you know, anything's possible if you get, if you put your mind to it and you sacrifice, and that's what I do today.
Do you think there's still a lot of young boys out there that are looking for inspiration, looking for that spiritual awakening or a mentor? Because we're seeing a lot of crime being committed by youth, especially knife crime is on the rise as well.
And gun crime.
And gun crime.
Yeah. You know, in an ideal world, you want these kids to be in good environments and brought up in the right environment, you know, with good parents and stuff, but unfortunately that's not what the world is like. It's tough, you know, and these kids are, for me, looking for attention. I can relate to them. I do go speak to kids. I'm proud to say I've come from where I came from, and you know, obviously the knife crime is terrible. You know, I never in my life put a knife up to anybody, you know, that's just not in me. Whereas in, you know, if you got into a fight, into a battle, and a fist-to-fist combat, I was very capable of looking after myself, but I always tend to look after my mates, and
we can tell.
And it got me in a lot of trouble.
This is, ladies and gentlemen, this is the first man that's been sat next to me that even I've thought, I don't match up to his size. That doesn't happen often. He is a very, very powerful unit is probably the best way to describe it.
Oh, thank you very much. I do look after myself, you know, I don't drink or anything, you know, I really take care of my body and where I'm going in my life, you know, I need to make sacrifices. But I wasn't always perfect, you know. I have enjoyed myself, and, you know, as a professional athlete, you know, you do, and there were times where I was single and, you know, go out with my friends and enjoy myself a little bit too much, and we've all been there, and it gets you nowhere. But, you know, my life is on a totally different level right now. You know, doing what I'm doing and creating the first ever rugby league comic, which we're launching next week on Sky Sports on the 15th, awesome. 12th of July, on beyond the Leeds Rhinos versus OKR game. Obviously, Betfred Super League have endorsed the comic, which was my goal. Sorry, I've gone away from there.
No, it's fine.
So going back to, you know, the kids. Listen, I'm here to inspire them young kids that I have been there and I've been through everything and I've seen it and I've been. As a young kid, I've seen stuff that young kids shouldn't see, and I've been sat in between smackers and crackers as young kids.
When you were a kid,
yeah,
and you were playing rugby, what was going through your mind and your heart? What, you know, what did it feel like having that ball, under your arm and just running straight ahead?
Well, I've always been known as a player, who's an aggressive player, very, you know, ran hard and tackle hard, and a powerful player, and. I've always been like that since I was a kid. So for me, you know, I think I was a young kid looking for attention, you know, because I was getting in a lot of trouble at school. I'd go to training and play with the kids, and all the kids would have mum and dad. Well, my mum, just me and my mum, you know, so my mum was my mum and my dad. But, you know, obviously she took me to rugby. My dad played rugby, but he left before I was born, so he didn't have any nurturing or any influence on my career, but he did obviously pass some talent down to me, some genetics. I mean, my boy now lives in Wigan and he's a spit double of me, and he's a great player.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah, but I'm not seeing my son as much as I'd like to see him, but Lucas Mason is doing fantastic. He really is a great player. He's only 13 and he's playing his trade in Wigan, which is, you couldn't ask for a better place.
One of the best academies to be brought up.
So yeah, I just loved it. It was a way for me to get all my energy and all my frustration out, and it always has been. And I think that was a problem when I retired, that when you can't express yourself in a certain way, and that's why you always see me in the gym, because I think it's very important for any man to be physically fit, because it does sort your mind out, mind, body and spirit. I don't train to go out to nightclubs and bars. I train for life. I train because life to me is a war, and if you want something, it's going to take a lot of sacrifice and it's going to take a lot of resistance.
So you're finishing school. How did it pan out for you? Is there some kind of apprenticeship program, youth programs for young players to develop into professional rugby league teams, or how does it work, or does someone snap you up? Or?
Yeah. As a young kid, you get picked for your local teams, like your district, your district, and schoolboys, and then you go on from schoolboys to Yorkshire, and then from Yorkshire to England schoolboys. So when I turned the full 360, when I was in a lot of trouble. Mm-hmm. And I went back to Dewsbury Moor that year, under-16s. I got myself back focused, rededicated. And that year we had a really good year. And I got selected for West Yorkshire. And then from West Yorkshire we played East Yorkshire. And then they picked a team from them two teams to select a Yorkshire team. I got picked for Yorkshire. And then we played Lancashire and we beat Lancashire in the series. And then from Lancashire and Yorkshire, they picked an England schoolboys team, which is the best 25 kids in the country. And myself and Matthew Diskiner, who was my teammate at Dewsbury Moor, we won that league that year. I got selected for England. So you can imagine, 12 months before, I was ready to go to jail as a young kid. I'm very lost to completely rededicate myself and focusing on what I wanted to do in my life and the sacrifice. And it's like my dreams was coming true as I was moving along, and eventually I got picked for England schoolboys, and then from that I wanted to sign professional. It took a few knockbacks before I actually signed.
What were those knockbacks?
So when I came back from England,
how old were you at the
time? I was
16.
I came back from France. Sorry, we played for England against France, and everybody had been signed. Apart from me and another guy called Wayne Price, everybody had been signed to academy teams. Right. So the academy team is the under-18s. So, and I had been signed. So I went to Bradford for a trial, Bradford Bulls. So back in 1999, 98. Brian Noble, after about 3 or 4 months, Brian Noble turned around and said, "Look, Keith, we're not going to sign you, but we could give you £50 a week for your bus fare. You can keep coming." And obviously I was disappointed. And so I packed my bags and that was one knockback. Then I went to Castleford, which is the total opposite end of the spectrum. Yeah, I went to Castleford Tigers, played a couple of games there. Graham Stedman turned around to me and said, "Look, Keith, we're not going to sign you." So you can imagine that's two knockbacks. And from where I came from, I'd worked really hard. And I think what got me through that is knowing where I come from and how hard I've worked. And I just thought it just wasn't my time. And I always believe God's time is perfect if you just keep going, if you keep moving, if you don't give in. And then I went to Leeds Rhinos. I went to Leeds. I had a pre-season there. I just turned 17. Played about 4 or 5 months there. And I can remember one day, Dean Bell was a coach. He was an ex-New Zealand captain. He was a coach there. And I was around a lot of good players. Some of them played for England. And Dean Bell came up to me and he said, "Look, Keith, I don't think you'll ever play Super League, and I don't think I'm not going to sign you." So you can imagine a 17-year-old kid, I've already been knocked back twice. And then this guy comes up to me and says that I will never play Super League. And I was devastated. And, and I always said that's my favourite failure, because I didn't give in. I didn't listen to what he had to say, because I hung in there one more time. And eventually the next club came in, Wakefield Trinity, and they signed me. And it was true that I would never play Super League, because I went to the best league in the world, and that's the NRL. But I did play Super League that same year. I signed for Wakefield, never looked back. Sometimes in life you're getting pulled back, it's not your time, but you've got to persevere. No matter, you might not be as talented, but I believe if you work hard for a very, very long period of time and you stick to it and you believe in it, you will break through. Someone will see you and someone will give you that helping hand. And that's my philosophy in life, and that's why you see me working my ass off, because I'm chasing it every single day and it'll never end till I'm in the grave.
So, right, with football, it's a fairly linear system, which is you play your Sunday league, yep. You end up getting picked up by academy, and then the academy goes from under 9s all the way to under 21s.
Yeah.
Why is rugby system not as linear? It just seems it seems that, well, one, it's not as easy to be scouted or picked up, because you have to have a genuine interest in the game. Like with football, you see many sort of camps, like all summer you see adverts for camps and stuff. You don't see much of that for rugby league.
Yeah.
And basically my question is, why is it not as lineal as football.
Okay, well, I'll just give you one question. I might give you two, actually. Okay. Two answers. Money.
Right.
Money's the first one.
Massive, yeah.
It's a billion-dollar industry. Rugby league's a million-dollar industry. It's not. Yeah. It's nowhere near touching. You've got, and the second one is marketing and advertising. That's a simple question to it. If we had the money like football had the money, we'd have under 9s and under 10s and 11s, 12s. We haven't got that. So, you know, the thing is, rugby league players are from Hull, pretty much the M62 corridor.
Yeah.
That's it. And you get some world-class players coming down that corridor, right? But that's really the pool of talent you're picking from, because it's a northern game. Rugby league is a working-class game, and it's such a tough game. You know, you have to be born into it. You can't just go play rugby league. You know, if someone gives you a good whack, if you haven't played rugby league before, you're not going to want to take another whack again. Yeah. But if you're brought into it, you know, we love it. I love the physicality of rugby league. But going back to, you know, we're talking about the money side of things, and that's what it is, it's the money side of things. What I'm bringing with the rugby blood is a comic, including 9 or 10 of the best players in the competition and Australia. In the comics, so what I'm doing is I'm making it, it's relevant, but I'm including players as comic heroes, so the kids are going to look at it and not just see David King, but they're going to see the favourite players in the comic as well, featuring. And I pitched that to Rob Elston. You know, I had a meeting with Rob Elston. Rob Elston is from Everton. He was the Everton CEO.
Yeah.
So he's from a football background.
Yeah.
So he's come to Super League, but he's got an entrepreneurship kind of mindset. So he's looking it out of, you know, rugby league's always been set in stone, and they always do this thing, you know, the old ways, and we'll do what we've always done. But obviously, as you know, with the Endgame and the Marvel comics and that, they're massive. Yeah. I did some research, never been done before. I'm the first to do it, and you know, Rob liked the idea, so they come on board and endorsed it.
Fair play, congratulations for that.
Yeah, it's
it looks really good.
It's I'm quite proud of it. You know, it goes on sale worldwide.
When does it go on sale?
11th of July. Yeah, so you can pre-order it now on Amazon. But you know, it took a lot of work, a lot of meetings, but it all came from my idea and my vision, and ultimately, it came from a film.
Yeah.
So what I did, I wrote a screenplay with a Norwegian guy. I sent the film script down to Pinewood Studios. They make all the James Bond films. They got back to me and they said, "Look, we like the film. We like the script. Can we meet you?" So. I don't know whether they thought I looked like James Bond or not, but I went down there. They said, "Look, we'd like to possibly make it. We'll put this amount of money in, to millions." But me being in the entertainment business, you know, for the last couple of years, learning everything about it, it takes a long time to make a film. So I looked. If you look at comics, in the first medium to everything, right?
Yeah.
Mm. So you got the X-Men that all come from comics.
Yeah.
Marvel, all the Marvel ones come from comics.
And Batman,
John Wick comes from comics, yeah. Right? So rugby blood is ultimately. We're going to go to Netflix and pitch for an anime series. So four 20-minute anime series, and then potential TV series, and then a film. But let's start, let's crawl before you walk, and let's start with a comic.
Yeah.
And, you know, what better way than to be, you know, you're endorsed by Super League Betfred straight away. You know, it's not like people get comics and go to the Premier League and say, "Look, we're doing a football comic about football players."
Yeah.
And, you know, it doesn't happen. I don't think it's ever happened, so, you know, we're making
it. It's a great idea. Absolutely good, tremendous idea.
So it's a bit of a twist, but, you know, I think the kids are going to love it, adults are going to love it, women are going to love it, and definitely rugby fans will love it.
So this is more of a cultural question more than anything.
Yeah.
Why do you think that kids from Asian backgrounds are not trying to get into rugby? Because regardless of if you... Because there aren't many, like, Asian sort of heroes within football, but they look at you, Ronaldo's and Messi's, and think, "I want that."
Yeah.
With cricket, obviously, you have the Pakistani national team, the Indian national team,
yeah.
Bangladesh, Sri Lanka. You have world-class subcontinental players. And for some reason, within your rugby, within rugby, tennis, there's more specific rugby, with rugby being a working man's game.
Yeah.
And a lot of Asian people coming from a working background.
Yeah.
Why do you think that the Asian background is not getting into rugby?
Well, I couldn't give you that answer. All I can think is, obviously, you've mentioned a few sports, you've mentioned cricket. So would that Asian family want that boy to play cricket first and foremost, or would they want him to play rugby league? I think they wanted to play cricket, right? You know, you're not going to go out there and get bust up and, you know, have to get toughened up over 10 years and then wishing upon a star and maybe get signed. Because not every kid gets signed, and not every kid goes to Australia and plays for the country. You know, you have to have some real dedication there. So I think it's more nurturing, and I think, like I said again about, you know, the money, I think they should have. I'd like to go to a school in Bradford or wherever, and there's a big Asian community, and going to the schools, and they should have people going in there and doing skill sessions and having rugby players going in there to bring the Asian community in, because to be honest with you, it's just a waste. Mm-hmm. I think it's a waste. You know, there's a massive Asian community in West Yorkshire alone, massive, probably the biggest in the whole country, right?
More likely.
And if you're not aiming for the Asian community, which is a big part of West Yorkshire, then you're just missing out on a massive pool of talent.
There are a lot of young Asian big lads out there in schools. You look at some of them.
We grew up with a couple of very, very big, powerful lads that couldn't fit. For me personally, I never saw rugby as an entrance or anything like that. It was only till I got to university and, you know, there was societies and socials that it kind of opened my horizon. That being said, it probably did help being the size I was as well. That, absolutely, you know, people were looking at you going, have you ever played this and that?
Yeah.
And I personally, I'm like yourself, I love the physicality. I love, there's just something about a crunching tackle on someone that's the same size as you, just what, hitting that oof.
Do you play then, yeah?
I dabbled in that in American football in university.
Oh, wow, nice.
So my mother hated it. My mother absolutely hated it. And the injuries on my legs completely justify that. But for me, again, it's like you said, there's just something about a crunching tackle on someone and just watching them hit the deck and them knowing you hit them. It's a weird feeling.
Yeah, and then just getting back up and playing the ball.
Oh, yeah, and then just getting on
and then all shaking hands at the end of the game. And doing that 40 weeks in the trot.
That's the other thing. Rugby's... Whereas football used to be the working man's game.
Yeah, it's a gentleman's game played by thugs.
Yeah.
And football's a thugs game played by gentlemen. Is that right?
Yes, that's right.
But yeah.
Going into the rugby, like, you see so many, it's so family friendly.
Oh yeah, unbelievable. It's fantastic.
Whereas I personally have to second think about taking a cousin or a nephew or niece to a football game.
Yeah.
Whereas rugby, you see families like 6, 10, 12 members of a family all in a stand.
Yeah.
There's no sort of abuse, no sort of there's a respect aspect in rugby.
Well, to be honest with you, I mean, them people who go to football games, they go for one reason, and they just go want to fight, not to watch the football. What I see with the fans, with the hooligans, rugby league is such a tough sport, and it's an admirable sport. You know, there's a reason why there's never had, football gangs, right?
Hooligans.
Hooligans, yeah. They're like firms, aren't they?
Mm. Ultras is a good term.
Yeah, but, you know, you can really appreciate watching a rugby league game at a high level. You're watching 17 guys against 17 guys.
Mm.
Full intensity, with skill, with courage, with strength, with stamina, with fitness. People breaking arms, breaking noses, and keep on playing. You know, It wouldn't make sense for someone to go in there and kick off when it's already going on the field.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So the football's like, you know, you have a little tackle there, a little tackle here. But rugby league's like legal brutality. It really is. You know, if you want to take some frustration out, but it's controlled aggression. You know, you can't go out there and, you know, run around like a madman. Sometimes I have done at times, but that's just sometimes your aggression, your emotions get the better of you. But
why do you think in the game there's that the players have more respect towards the referee in rugby, whether it's union or league, compared to football? Because let's be honest, the rugby players could probably crush half the referees with their hands.
But
when the game being told that look, you're going to sin mid and you're getting sent off, they listen, they're calm, there's no sort of disrespect towards the referee at all. Why do you think that is?
Well, I just think rugby league are a different kettle of fish completely to footballers, first and foremost. You know, how can I put this? I can't just say real men and they're not real men. They're tough men, right? And when you're playing rugby league, it's so hard and so intense, right? So if you've got energy to mouth off at the referee, which if you do, though, you get 10 metres, you're getting a penalty against it straight away because the referees don't tolerate it. It's called respect. And the thing is, how you train and now you're brought up in rugby league, and the coaches are very, they're very strict on discipline, and how you, and how you approach the game, and how you, and how you, and how you conduct yourself as a human being. They don't just train you to be a rugby league player; they train you to be how to be a human being and how to conduct yourself on and off the field. And I think that comes a lot in the games. So you don't have energy to kick off with a referee, and if you do, if you keep giving penalties away, you're not going to play the next week. So as you've got the footballers in there who are getting £100,000 a week, they can't afford to drop that player, because that player could be scoring goals. But it's just a fine line. It's just a different culture of people, I think, you know. And and when you see the diving stuff,
yeah,
you know, I've had my nose snapped over the side of my face. I've had it strapped back on, snapped back into place, strapped up, straight back on the field, and then won against Leeds Rhinos. And I played the next week. Thank God he straightened my nose. But you can imagine,
yeah,
that being a football player would have been out for, I don't know, 3 months, 4 months. But rugby league players are just, we bash each other all year round in a legal way. We're just different human beings.
Let's go back into your career. So you're at Wakefield.
Yeah, started there.
You started at Wakefield, and then Melbourne come calling.
Yeah.
How did that make you feel, that you went from a kid who got told he would never make it to a rugby league to going to arguably the biggest rugby nation in the world and playing in, as you say, the premier division of rugby?
It was just like a dream come true. There was no English players there, but there's one player there, Adrian Morley. It was unheard of. Compared to now, they have some very good players over there from England, right? But I was 19, and they saw me play for Wales, Chris Jones, and then they were looking for an English front rower, and luckily it was me. And I remember one day, Willie Poaching, who was our captain, came up to me and said, "Keith, listen." He says, "What on a word do we have? What's that?" He went, "The Storm want to sign you."
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. We still have Keith with us. And I unfortunately cut you off just as you were getting into going to Melbourne.
Yeah.
So just if you'd just like to finish that off, really.
Yeah, so obviously Melbourne came in for me. Willie Poaching pulled me to one side and said, "Look, Keith, you know, the Storm want to sign you." "Oh, Storm. Went, "Yeah, Melbourne Storm." I went, "Melbourne Storm? They've just won the Premier the year before. They were a new club in the NRL. They were a very new club. They came in, bought a lot of good players." And he says, "Yeah, I just can't believe it, you know, from being knocked back by 3 clubs and then having a standout year in the first team at just 19 years of age." Melbourne came in. I played for Great Britain that year, went to South Africa. I did the deal with Melbourne. Leeds Rhinos, what I was saying before, came in. The club that said I'd never play Super League came back in, offered me a 4-year deal, and I just said, just like that, just kindly declined it. And I went to Melbourne, had 2 years at Melbourne, and it was just a dream come true. It really was. To play in Australia, to be the youngest ever English player to go to Australia, to sign at that age was unheard of. And then making my debut at 19 against New Zealand Warriors was a super, super proud moment. And remember, I went there and I wasn't really established. I was just coming up. You know, I might have been a young star here, but over there I was like a little fish in a big pond.
Yeah.
But I just, you know, just a challenge for anything in my life. You know, if something it looks like I'm scared of doing, but I know I should do it, and that's what I always go for. I always go for the thing what scares me, and that opportunity I could not turn down. And I went there and I was playing with the likes of Billy Slater, Cameron Smith, Stephen Kearney, Scott Hill, Richard Swain, Robbie Ross, just some absolute legends. And like I said before, we're still friends now. I had 2 good seasons there. Unfortunately, I hurt my leg. My second game, I hurt my knee. The first injury I'd ever had, I was out for 6 weeks, I had a bit of homesick. But the first week I came back, I played against New Zealand Warriors, and it was just an awesome experience. And played around 10 games while I was there, and then I came back and signed for St Helens.
So you come back and signed for St Helens, arguably one of the premier teams at the time.
Oh yeah, absolutely. That was the main reason. I mean, St Helens showed interest before I went to Melbourne. But looking at Saints, they had, you know, a stacked team full of super talent players who I looked up to. One of them, Kieran Cunningham, was probably one of the best players I've ever played with. They have a statue outside St Helens Rugby Ground now of Kieran, because they were voted the best player ever to play for Saints. I mean, Kieran was there when I got there. He said, "Oh, wow, Keith, we needed you." You know, I'm a 21-year-old kid. I'm very young for a prop, for, yeah. for my position. A prop forward doesn't really mature till he's around 28. And I slotted right in there. We had people like Paul Sculthorpe, Sean Long, Paul Wellens, Jason Hooper, Jamie Lyon, Willie Talau. Just a phenomenal team. Chris Joint. And I really enjoyed my time at St. Helens. Really did. Really enjoyed it. I've actually got Kieran Cunningham as a character in the comic. Wow. We're still friends. But, you know, I did win some silverware there. A boyhood dream was watching Challenge Cup finals as a kid. You know, watching the greats like Wigan and Widnes and Halliday and Lee yeah. running down and Martin at Fire scoring 100 metre turns. And, you know, at 21 years old, I was playing in a Challenge Cup final, not only against a team, but as rivals, which was Wigan. And I just remember that the whole week leading up to the final was amazing. You've got to remember that the Challenge Cup is one of the most prestigious cups on the planet. It's been around for 120 years, and the cup is absolutely amazing and beautiful. And we went out there that day. It was 90 degrees. My mum was there. Very proud moment for my mum, because we'd been through a hell of a lot. You know, but the best thing for any boy is to make the mum proud. And we came out, and when I picked that trophy up at the end, it was just a sweet victory, not just for me, but for my mum as well.
Millennium Stadium, Wembley, Twickenham. Which is the best stadium you played in out of the three?
All fantastic, mega stadiums.
Because they're all, as I said to you up there, they're all boyhood. Yeah. I'm going to play there, I want to play there.
Yeah, I mean, Wembley's got to be like, you know, Wembley played there. 2009, like you say again, it was just amazing to be in another final. It's very hard to get to a final.
Of course.
I remember the St. Helens final. We played every top team to get to the final, so it's like a round robin, like FA Cup. In the FA Cup, you have Manchester United playing Reading, or you know, some very poor team. Yeah. But we picked all the Super League teams. We picked the top five teams. So we picked Bradford, then we picked Leeds, then we picked Hull, then we got Huddersfield, then we played Wigan in the final. So our run to the final was very, very tough. So when we won it was all more sweet. It was that much sweeter because it was so tough. But as team was a phenomenal team. And going back to the question, I'd have to say the Principality, the Cardiff Stadium was the best because of the atmosphere that day. It was arriving on Wigan and St. Helens, they ate each other just to beat that trophy. It was, for me, that was the tip of the iceberg. For me, I'd arrived. Where I come from, the struggles and the tough times I've been through, my perseverance paid off. And I just said to anybody, you know, it takes time to be great, but just take it one day at a time. And for me, that's one of my biggest highlights of my career. Wembley, I absolutely loved it, and Twickenham, I loved as well.
Do you feel like there's a slight void in your silverware by not winning the Super League? You won the league leaders,
do you feel
there's just that silver lining sort of thing that you missed out by not winning the Super League?
Well, you know, for me, everything I've done in my career is a bonus. So, you know, coming away from that court that day and going on what I've done, you know, it's like beggars can't be choosers. But, you know, my talent got me through to play in some of the world's best teams for some of the world's best players. But I have no regrets, because it wasn't for lack of effort. Definitely from me, you know.
Yeah, of course.
It wasn't for lack of effort. You can understand that it's a 13-17 man game. It's not a one man game. So, you know, if you've got a world class player in an average team, you're not going to win a Super League.
Yeah.
I think the reason why Leeds Rhinos did so well, because they kept the nucleus of the team for over 10 years. It was the same team. They never changed it.
And they're struggling now.
They're struggling now because they've lost the spine of the team. But, you know, that goes to show how important them players were.
Yeah.
Now, you know, the fight for relegation. But yeah, it would have been nice. I've lost in a few semi-finals to Challenge Cups. I could have played in maybe 7 Challenge Cup finals.
Yeah.
I've lost in a couple of semi-finals to get to Old Trafford.
Yeah.
It hurts, you know. It's not nice, it's not a nice feeling. But you know, I've been knocked down many, many times in my life, and life is about failures, but facing it and getting after it and just every single day, because we're not here to, if we were to win all the time, you wouldn't have the feeling of victory. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So if you're looking for that one win, that one big shot, it takes thousands of missed shots to get to that big one big shot. You can't be looking for blissness all the time.
Definitely.
You know, you've got to be working towards wanting it for that one moment.
Yeah.
I believe everybody gets that one moment, yeah? So it's like me coming on here now, and I'm speaking to you guys. I'm enjoying it. I'm looking forward to coming on here. But if I can help you guys, you know, boost your ratings on here, then that to me is serving.
Yeah.
That's giving me, helping you guys get your shot.
Yeah.
You know, you can bring me back in 12 months. Yeah. I'll have done a hell of a lot more. But
we love Danny.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. And the good thing is, you know, when you retire from rugby league and sport, a lot of people just fall off. And it's, you know, they go, so a lot of people fall into depression and they suffer.
Right. Should we go into...
That's what I was about to go into.
Right, go for it.
So you had your 14-year career.
Yeah.
And... as you were talking about the depression and all that, how tough was the change from finishing your career to kind of settling to normal life?
Yeah, listen, I'd done rugby league since I was 6 years old. You know, a lot of rugby league players, I mean, a lot of sports people, when they retire, everything stops, finish, kaput, boom. There's nothing in place for sportsmen, unless you're set up, unless you've got a business, unless you've got a trade, which many sportsmen don't, because they're fully focused on what they're doing in rugby league or in sport or whatever. For me, I fell into that trap. A good friend of mine, Joe Calzaghe, you'll know him, a great boxer, he said to me, "Look, Keith, you're a long time retired, but I do appreciate, I understand that you're going to leave the game on your terms," which I did, after a highly publicised court case, which I won. And I decided to walk away from rugby. I did a film with Mickey Rourke and I stepped away. I was single, living on my own, and it's very, very tough. It's very tough. I wasn't myself, you know, I was self-destructing and I was doing things I shouldn't have been doing for quite a while. And I ended up losing everything. I lost 2 houses, I lost my license, I wasn't seeing my kids. You know, there were a lot of adversity going through my life, and I went through a very dark time where I was struggling. And because us big rugby guys or big athletes, we don't want to open up about our feelings. We keep it inside, which is not good at all. And I eventually pulled through. You know, I think when I was always in the gym all the time, but I never had that support there. I was always, people come running to me, keep your eye. I'm the strong one. But ultimately, you know, there was nothing there. There was nothing set up for me for when I retired. But I knew I wanted to be an actor, and that's what gave me my vision back. And that's what I've been sober now for 2 or 3 years.
Congratulations.
Yeah. For me to be the best I want to be, to want to go to the heights I want to go to. I look at someone like Michael Jordan, would he be going out drinking all the time? No, he wouldn't. He'd be working his ass off, and that's exactly what I'm doing, and that's exactly why you see me achieving, doing things that no one's done before, you know, and that comes from sacrifice. And I say in the book, no sacrifice, no glory, but ultimately, you know, for guys out there, if you're struggling, speak out, you know, talk. It takes more courage to open up and talk than it is to keep it inside and implode. And I went through my tough time. My press release for the launch of Rugby Blood is about how I came about making Rugby Blood. It's because a young guy took his life. I went to speak to him at a mental institution, and unfortunately he took his life. And I said to my partner, I want to do something to help rugby league players, and incorporate him in a Rugby Blood comic and potential Netflix series, and give him back, and give him 2 players, Conrad Hurrell and Jermaine McGilvery, film parts. You know, not only am I just... you know, helping people, but you know, I'm giving these guys future opportunities to have a job after rugby.
Definitely.
Well, unfortunately, that's all we have time for this this hour. Keith, thank you very much. Unfortunately, there's so much more about you that unfortunately we just didn't have time to dabble into. Just for people out there, how can they get your socials and what to look out for in the near future with yourself?
Well, I'm on obviously social media, Instagram, Keith Mason _ official, same on Twitter, my Facebook. Obviously I've got a film coming out, Driving Force, which is on August the 1st. Yeah. The release of the comic is on the 12th of July, it'll be on Sky Sports. What else am I doing? I'm doing a film next month in Netflix. There's so much. You should have done a part two on this one.
Well, we'll definitely get you back in. But Keith, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you very much, guys. Like I said, stay strong, never give in, and you know, just go after your dreams no matter what. Just don't give up.
Cheers, pal.
Cheers. Thank you. That's all we have for the first hour, but we'll be right back after the ads.